Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
Japan's greatest victory, Britain's worst defeat. But we're reading a pamphlet here by the mastermind person, a very revealing sort of heartfelt pamphlet, which is "Read This Alone and the War Can Be Won." This is the ideological programming of Japanese soldiers who were invading, and you sort of so this is part two. It may take three or four parts to read this pamphlet, so this is now a pamphlet. It's taking taking a bit to read through it. So I'm just reading through what the people think. So it's really interesting. It's sort of like a mixture of history and which is interpretable, but it's how that history is interpreted and how that was boilerplated on to these people who are also the product of the same history that they're talking about. It's pretty amazing. So item 6 of chapter 2, be strong, correctly behaved and self-controlled. If you look at the history of past campaigns, you'll see troops who are really efficient in battle do not plunder, rob or chase after women, or drink or quarrel. Those who flee and hide in the midst of bullets are great braggarts and the great tormentors of the weak. Bear in mind that the misbehavior of one soldier reflects the good name of the whole army, and discipline yourself. When a hero of many campaigns is court-martialed for plunder and rape and finds himself sentenced to several years penal servitude, there is no excuse to go back home remembering that the rancors and the string emotions of the day you set out for war, back to the parents, brothers and sisters who have been daily visiting the shrine on your behalf, daily setting a tray for you in your absence, and praying for your safety. Know that you have been punished for misconduct on the field of battle. What sort of triumphal return will that be? What matter of apologies can you offer those brave comrades of yours who have died? This is a warning which should be particularly heeded by those who are in camp after the battle had finished, or assigned to duties in the rear as far from the sound of bullets. Not to heed it is to invite failure, which can never be lived down. You must discipline yourselves to correct behaviour, that meritorious deeds and feats of endurance may not be turned into nothing by a moment of dissipation. And when living in uncomfortable conditions and performing disagreeable tasks, you must be patient and self-controlled in the spirit of your dead comrades. 7. Preserve and protect natural resources. Thanks to the malignity of Anglo-Americans, Japan is not able to buy anywhere in the world the oil which is so vital to them. This is essential for our national survival to gain possession of the oil of South Asia. But it's unlikely that the enemy will surrender to us easily. You must expect them to try every means in their power to destroy it first. They will try demolition and bombing by dynamite. But we must anticipate them, seize the oil drums and installations, and keep strict watch to prevent them from suffering damage. With all our other supplies too, we should capture as many as possible and either utilize them on the spot or transmit them back to the homeland. We must bear in mind that once oil installations, factories, railways, communications are damaged, it's not easy to us to restore them to the original state. Again, captured vehicles and arms are often rendered useless by being meddled with by people who do not understand the correct procedures. In the past wars, it has been common to practice to destroy and burn all captured enemy supplies on the excuse that it would be an encumbrance. In this war, not only must we consider it imperative to seize the enemy supplies intact, but utilize them to the utmost. But it's vital to bear constantly in mind that our own side economy in the use of ammunition, foodstuffs and fuels, but not in a single round is saved a scrap of bread, a drop of petrol. This is the drain on our national resources. 8. Is our present enemy stronger than the Chinese army? If we compare the present enemy of the Chinese army, we see that while the officers in the European NCO and other ranks are almost overwhelmingly native, and consequently the sense of solidarity in each unit between the officers and men is practically nil. Although it must be admitted that they are infinitely more copiously supplied than the Chinese army, with planes, tanks, motorized vehicles, heavy artillery, much of this equipment is nevertheless outdated, and what is more, in fact, that the soldiers who operate are ill-trained without enthusiasm renders it worse than useless. Blood attacks are what these people most dread. There you go. You may be killed in battle, but don't die of disease. There will be naturally planes above you, tanks before you, warships blazing away at sea, submarines operating beneath the surface. But there are yet other dangers peculiar to the present campaign, which you must heed. A great variety of deadly diseases, and the great enemy of malaria, mosquitoes, lying to wait for you. Historical fact that all tropical campaigns since ancient times, far more people have died through disease than have been killed in battle. In tropical areas, as in Japan, the majority of diseases enter through the mouth, but in Southeast Asia you must take precautions also against mosquitoes and snakes. The fall and hail of bullets to meet a hero's death, but if there is no glory of dying of disease or accident through inattention or to hygiene or carelessness. And a further point you would do well to consider is that native women are almost all infected with the venereal disease. If you tamper with them, you'll make the whole native population your enemy. Chapter 3. By what stages will the war progress? From the long voyage to the landing site, the battlefields are all in South Asia, separated by many hundred miles from Formosa. To reach some of them takes a ship a week or 10 days. Several hundred warships and transports are now crossing this expanse of sea. But when you think of it, our ancestors conquered these same turbulent waters in wooden sailing vessels, the so-called Red Seal ships, some 300 years ago. For the purposes of trade, they sailed their length and breadth in the Hachiman ships of the military ventures. When the long cramped voyage is over, you must force landing on the face of enemy resistance. Landing assaults have always, since ancient time, been held in perilous undertakings. But our superbly trained, peerless Japanese army has never yet registered a failure in any operation of this kind. Be confident, be well prepared, and perform feats which bring upon you the wonder and admiration of the world. Attack on the main positions and fortifications. The enemy forces in South Asia consist of forcibly recruited, hastily organized armies of natives with a hardcore of white troops that are in the same class as the Chinese army, but they have considerable equipment and way of artillery, tanks, planes, and inferior soldiers though they may be. You should not altogether despise them, since it seems probable that, as a general rule, they will occupy positions at strategic points and resist from behind fortifications. You must not rush crushing that enemy at the landing points, but also make a march forward, a rapid battle-ride sweep through the sweltering tropical terrain, and launch an attack at once upon the main positions. In order to avoid prepared concentration of fire and cheap surprise, it may frequently happen that you will traverse jungle regions and way through swamps and paddy fields, securing enemy supplies and guarding strategic positions. 3. After disposing of all enemy resistance, you must secure oil resources, keep guard of important factories, harbours, railways, and take every precaution to ensure the enemy forces, land to sea or air, are given no opportunity to strike back. At such a juncture, it is normal for a small force to garrison a wide area, and to this end, a great many schemes must be devised, from the construction of obstacles and military positions to the construction, conciliation and employment of native population. A long occupation and enforcement of order. Realizing the war may well be a protected affair, you may carry forward preparations for a lengthy campaign, and as well as making the fullest use of resources of that country, it will be important to take special care in preservation of arms, of clothing, supplies. Since it's no small matter to transport supplies by sea all the way from Japan, you should fight and live on the bare minimum, and you should also, perhaps above all else, take good care and avoid sickness, that you do not succumb to the heat. Chapter 4. What are you to do on the ship? Keep your secrets. The success of landing assault depends on, above all, on surprise. If the enemy knows too soon that we intend to effect a landing, things can be made very difficult for us. An innocent remark in a letter can bring about a defeat of the whole army. And loose talk of soldiers drinking at bars just before embarkation has often acquainted the enemy's spies with our secrets. Think of the trials endured by the 47 loyal retainers in the keeping their plans secrets until the day of the final revenge upon the Lord's enemy, and mutually admonish yourself to the following example. Well, that's something I'm going to do. 47 loyal retainers. Have a look at that. During the current China campaign, a soldier who landed in the South China wrote a letter that placed on the inside of an empty beer bottle, which he then sealed and tossed into the sea. The bottle, carried by the tide, water washed ashore the coast of Korea. Now, what if it had been carried to Vladivostok? Aircraft, submarines seeking to discover movements of a transport ship, not infrequently gained their first clues from scraps of paper found floating on the sea. In disposing of soiled articles or other rubbish, you must carefully observe the ship's regulations. So the good old Australians had to go to Vietnamese latrines and dig them up to get letters and stuff like that. 2. Settle your personal affairs in case of emergency. Since much of the action in this war will take place at sea, or since after landing, small units may frequently be sent ahead deep into enemy territory, you must resign yourself in advance to the possibility that the bodies of the dead may never be recovered. Corpses drifting, swollen in the sea depths, corpses rotting in mountain grasses, we shall die by the side of our Lord, we shall die, we shall not look back. Such from ancient times has been the proud boast of firm resolve of the men of Japan. Before going into battle area in a ship at the very latest, you will write your will, enclosing it with a lock of hair and a piece of fingernail, so that you are prepared for death at any time or place. And these wills should be gathered together by units and sent back to the base by some secure means of transmission. This is the only prudent that a soldier should settle his personal affairs in advance. Again, should the ship be sunk or catch fire, it will be necessary for you to take to boats the water with only the minimum of equipment. You should prepare yourself for this eventuality, so at the time of emergency you may come in good order onto the decks with a life jacket attached and carrying out your rifle, your water can and some bread. Do not fall ill. Not only will the conditions on the ship be exceedingly cramped and uncomfortable, but heat will be extreme. In the circumstances, troops may easily suffer from sicknesses or similar stomach disorders and lessen their resistance to disease. If only one of those men sleeping side by side on the mess decks, like a sardines in a tin, should be carrying infectious disease, the consequence will be catastrophic. If you wish to avoid distressing others and possibly inflicting losses far greater than a submarine or air attack might cause, take good care of what you eat and drink in a period before embarkation, and do not drink any unboiled water on the ship. If you feel out of sorts, go to the MO at once for an examination and treatment. If you foolishly conceal the fact that you have an infectious disease, you will cause distress to the whole of the ship and kill many of your comrades. Oh my goodness, this is a 12-point plan to prevent sickness. To avoid sicknesses, you will do well to attend to the following points. Keep your morale high and always be aware of the importance of duty you have to perform. 2. If the ship is tossing, sleep with your head and feet pointing port to starboard. If the ship is rolling, sleep with your head and feet and board pointing fore to aft. Look only at distant objects. If possible, do not concentrate on the motion of the ship. Distract yourself as far as you can from playing checkers and similar games. 5. For bad sailors, tightly binding the stomach and practicing respiration method can be effective. Both the ship and the small boats. The respiration methods is as follows. When the ship rises, breathe deeply. When the ship falls, breathe out. On ship, it is best to carry out lying on your side. In a small boat, it is found more effective if at the same time you straighten your legs and the boat rises and bends and falls. Overeating and undereating are both to be avoided. Always keep your stomach just sufficiently full. If you eat absolutely nothing when seasick, you will get worse. Food may repel you, but you should eat a little. Get sufficient sleep. This is 8. For those of you who are fond of sake, a little does no harm, but do not drink to excess. Constipation is to be avoided at all costs. Those who are constipated should take medicine to restore regular motions. Avoid heartburn. Do not eat oranges or other fruits of strong sugar content and acidity. 11. Walk on the deck to do physical exercise. 12. Use preventatives, bicarbonate of soda pills, stomach tablets, sedative, bisium, not explained, shintan pills. Care should be taken, all these matters, but most important of all, you should have firmly believe, I shall not get seasick. People who weakly tell themselves, I may be sick, or I hope I shan't be sick, are invariably sick. the fact that children who are too young to worry about the strongest of all seas should serve as a good example to you. Be kind to horses.
Okay.
Never forget, in the dark and steaming lowest decks of the ship, with no murmur of complaint or of unfairness for the treatment, the army horses are suffering in patience. On a voyage through the tropics, it is essential for horses to have good ventilation, fresh drinking water, clean stores. As the voyage stretches on, horses and men alike suffer from fatigue. Remember, however, exhausted you may feel, the horses have reached a state of exhaustion even more distressing. Treat them with kindness and sympathy. Fresh air and cold water are no less essential for horses than men of tropical voyage. Moreover, men can walk about in open decks, but horses grow weak because they cannot be given proper exercise. To be helpful, therefore, to make them move backward and forward in their stores. 6. Grow attached to your weapon and care for them. Salt breezes and damp are the enemies to your weapon. On a ship, air is always damp. Breezes blow carelessly, ceaselessly from everywhere. If you're not careful, your weapon will grow red with rust and be unserviceable when a moment comes to use it. Weapons are living things. The more kindly you treat them, the more accustomed yourself to handling them. The harder they will work for you on the battlefield. Pay good heed, however, not to set off accidentally and kill your comrades. Yeah, so I must admit, probably after 30 years I picked up an SLR, which is my army training rifle, and it just felt as smooth and silky as ever. It's a smooth, silky feeling you get when you really look after a weapon. Do not waste water. 7. Do not waste water. Water is your saviour. The supply of water carried is limited. Water tanks on a transport ship is small. If you use water as you use on land, you will soon be exhausted. In tropical campaigns, when the water is gone, it's the end of everything. To imagine that because the water in the sea is limitless, the water on the ship is likewise as high stupidity. Everyone from the staff officers downward must practice most careful economy. Because now that's changed now. In terms of if you're unhydrated, your efficiency drops so incredibly quickly. Precautions against fire. Nothing more terrifying than a fire at sea. As a ship carries a large quantity of petrol, do not smoke except in places where regulation permits. If your life jackets are stuffed with materials called kapok, similar to cotton wool, which is highly flammable, do not hold naked flame in the vicinities. What to do in an aerial submarine or submarine attack? To avoid attack by aircraft or submarines, abide strictly by the regulations of closing all portholes and hatchways at night, regardless of the heat. You must expect, in a long voyage such as this, to be subject to at least once or twice aerial and submarine attack. With such a team, this is the most vital thing of all, that you should not panic. The shells are not likely to hit the target. Even if the ship is stuck and sinks, each vessel is equipped with a boat sufficient to hold the whole ship's complement, and each individual has a life jacket. Proceed calmly with light equipment and your allotted emergency stations, and there wait for orders of your officer. Unnecessarily chatter and pointless rushing about are strictly forbidden. Trips never proceed alone, so bear in mind in an emergency, you will certainly receive assistance from other vessels. And since you are under observation by soldiers in the nearest vessels, it is imperative that you do nothing fuelless or cowardly, which will make you the laughingstock of others afterwards. Since aircraft and submarines attack mostly in daylight, the last point is doubly important to remember. A little careless, number 10, a little careless can cause great indecency. A ship crammed full with severely confined spaces, with landing craft, motor vehicles, luggage, horses and much else. Amid all the derricks are working soldiers on detail on the ship's crew are running about on their service duties. In stormy weather, the waves can be washing across the decks. At night, in pitch dark, men sitting on the ship's rails to cool themselves have not been frequently lost overboard. And any number of people have been known to slip at the mouth of a hold and fall down the ship's bottom, or to have had their heads crushed by luggage being loaded onto the deck. And there are no tales of glory. Watch your step, watch your head, and do not enter the areas of danger or among the lifeboats or the landing craft on the ship's deck. 11. Ammunition, food, and water. One special feature of landing assault is that no supplies from the rear may reach the fighting troops for anything up to 5 to 10 days after landing. The time varying with circumstances in a campaign like the present one, which we shall be separated from the base by many hundreds of miles of sea, the problem of supply is particularly difficult, and this in mind you must carry with you wherever you ever as much ammunition, food and water as you can possibly manage without hampering your freedom of movement. Limit will doubtless be indicated to you by your officers, and you must throw any of this into the sea on the excuse that it makes you too hot, or carelessly forget it. Particular care in preparation for the landing is salt. Okay. When it's time for landing, your ship will anchor some distance from the shore and you will transfer to a smaller craft. Each soldier must not have his weapons and other equipment well arranged that he can retain unhampered freedom of movement in the narrow space of the landing craft. But he also must take good care to check the efficiency of those weapons, which he will use immediately upon landing, and to forget no attachments or accessories. The machine guns, infantry guns, etc. units forming the first wave of the landing assault will be issued to these troops in the ship. They must be loaded in advance into the landing craft and firmly secured with rope. The equipment of the second and subsequent waves of assault troops will have to be lowered by rope in straw bags from the ship's deck to the landing craft in the water. And for this, it will be essential to have ropes prepared in advance. That is to say, binding ropes to the artillery or rifles and guns covers serving as portable shelters and tripods as bases, binding ropes for the accessory boxes and ammunition boxes, ropes for lowering. Clothing will vary according to the type of soldier, but for example, a foot soldier should have the following footwear: reinforced socks, no packs, but water can be hold all slung across the shoulders. All ammunition, food, mess tins, excess circulation should be stuffed into the folded tent, which is carried on the back like a knapsack. Alternatively, it could be bound to the waist. Small spoons, such like, should be tucked into your belt at the rear and hung from the shoulders on string. Respirators should be carried at the ready. Wire cutters should be thrust into your belt at the side. To fit the life jacket with a release section on your right shoulder, that it may not hinder you shooting. Hand grenades should be carried in the hold all. 12. Fit makeshift floats to heavy armaments and ammunition boxes. A convenient way to ensure that machine guns, infantry guns, and other heavy weapons and ammunition boxes do not sink even if they fall into the water is to fit them with makeshift floats. At times, too, it may be necessary to haul heavy armaments ashore through the sea, in which case two or three men can manage it by means of ropes attached to these floats. Going up to chapter 5. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. How you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.